about you today and learning how to master the business of being you. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, September 22nd, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles. It's a beautiful, beautiful fall day here in L.A., so thank you so much for joining us. We love to hear from you, so please give a listen live, or you can ask questions at 347-857-2710, and you can always email us at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com, and who wouldn't want that goodvibeexperience@gmail.com? Well, my guest today, hopefully, you know, technology, as beautiful as it is, sometimes presents some issues, so hopefully my guest today will make his voice heard, and if not, we will carry on without him, but we will discuss how fabulous he is. So let me tell you a little bit about Scott Ventrella. He is a top national speaker, collegiate lecturer, and executive coach, and he is the president and founder of Positive Dynamics, specializing in individual and organizational development with a primary focus on leadership. I like that, being a leader. And he is the author of two highly acclaimed books. One, The Power of Positive Thinking in Business, 10 Traits for Maximum Results. And this one's my favorite, The Me, Inc. Love the title, How to Master the Business of Being You. And we're going to be talking with Scott Ventrella, hopefully, a little bit later in our show, if the technological gods are with me. So please, let's see if we can make that happen. And, well, let's talk about, you know, Scott, you know, for those of you out there who are celebrating the Jewish high holidays, a happy 5772 to you. And for the Jewish community, this is always a time of reflection and looking back at one's life and seeing how we can change and move forward. And it's very similar to a lot of the philosophies that Scott Ventrella deals with in corporate organizations as far as ethics and integrity and how they play a role in business and getting the employees and the corporation to move forward and excel and work together as one. And it's so challenging today, especially with the advent of technology and how technology helps us in so many, many ways. And yet somehow I believe it's a hindrance because it prevents us from being present and it prevents us from communicating one-on-one in a way that really is a deterrent to creating relationships and networking. I have experienced several times a younger generation, maybe a lot of people in their 20s who are glued to the iPod, the BlackBerry, anything techie, and yet when it comes down to confronting, not necessarily confronting someone, but in a role of business or even a personal connection of communicating one-on-one to someone, that's where the problem arises, that we just don't know what to say or how to express ourselves. And I am opening up the board to our listeners to please call in. And if you'd like to participate in this conversation about how we can communicate as a community and help each other move forward in becoming successful in all areas of our life, which is so needed today. It's a big issue. It truly is about being present because life can just pass you by if you're not present, if you're not in the now. And for those of you who are taking a more spiritual path, there's Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, and how important being in that now is, being in touch with the inner you, going deep within oneself to uncover or discover the answers that lie within us. We seem to always be looking outside of ourselves for the answers, and I can tell you from my own personal experience that that necessarily isn't the best approach, because looking outside ourselves always sets us up for an expectation, and expectation equals disappointment. And can I tell you how many times I've been disappointed? The show's not long enough to tell you how many times I've been disappointed. So I think it's important not to have any expectations. Just be true to who you are and do the things that you enjoy based on you, and spreading that own unique quality that we all have. And that is what is so infectious and contagious, and everybody wants a piece of it. We all, I think, are looking for a way to find help, especially in these difficult times. I just can't even read the paper anymore, because every page I turn, every article I read has something to do with the economy and how we're failing in our schools, and there are so many disasters and this and that. And where is the encouragement? Where is the guidance that we need to really say, hey, it's up to us. Each one of us can make a difference. And I want to share with you that early in Scott Ventrella's career, he was recruited to assist the president of the Peel Center in restructuring after the passing of its founder, Norman Vincent Peale, who happened to write a very powerful book called The Power of Positive Thinking. And how, if we shift an attitude, you know, there's that saying that I think is overused right now. It's about thinking outside that box. Well, if you were to take that box and tip that box on one of its accesses, it becomes a diamond. So how easy it is to just look at our own life and see that if we were to just switch our attitude or our approach about one area of our life, how different that approach would be. And there are so many ways in which to find the joy, the bliss, the happiness, and the success in our lives that we all are seeking. And it's about calling in to those friends, those connections. For those of you that listened to my show last time with Dee Wallace, whose book Bright Light is about her spirituality through a life of acting, and how acting became the platform for her life, that she was able to stand outside her life through acting and experience how she lived her life. And the same thing is with Scott Ventrella and his book, The Me Inc., which applies business principles to our life. If you are a corporation and you had a mediocre leader, I don't think you would want to permit that mediocre leader to continue in that capacity. You would want to take that person aside and say, how can we move forward? Well, we're going to learn some other tips on how to move forward, but how about a little moving forward with some music by Keith Chagall, The Flight of the Monarchs. Give a listen. Ventrella, executive coach, and the technical gods are on my side, and it's all about a positive approach to life, and we're going to learn more about positive approaches to life and Scott's wonderful role in leadership and ethics. So please give a warm welcome to my very special guest, Scott Ventrella.
Good to be with you.
Hi, Scott.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, thank you.
Well, you know, one thing I can tell about you already that's so important is determination, and that's always a good a good quality to have.
A key trait of a positive thinker is determination.
That's
keep
right.
Keep pressing on. Keep moving on.
Keep putting one foot in moving forward.
That's right.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, you know, I'm sure our listeners are having all kinds of questions about you and your two books that you have written, one, The Power of Positive Thinking, 10 Traits for Maximum Results. Now, did this book come about due to your working with the Peel Center? How did it all happen?
Exactly. I worked with the Peel Center for about 5 years, and I went there specifically with the purpose to adapt Norman Vincent Peale's principles from his best-selling book going back to the 1950s, one of the top-selling books at that time. And I wanted to adapt it to bring it into a more of a business environment. And so that's exactly where those principles came from. It was all based on his seminal works, not just the book, but, of course, he published 30 or 40, possibly more, over his lifetime.
And can you share, I mean, being in an institute with Norman Vincent Peale and his philosophy about the power of positive thinking, I can only imagine how that organization was run, but you were called in to restructure it after his death. What did you do differently?
Well, first of all, you know, he was larger than life, and when you have an organization built around a personality, then when that personality is removed from the scene, he passed away in 1993, all of a sudden the organization was really faced with the prospect of, my gosh, you know, everybody paid attention to his message. He was the vehicle to communicate that message, and he did that in a number of different mediums, including radio, certainly the printed media, etc. And so to restructure, really, my goal was to pick up what were the core principles. So to really focus on the message, we had to move away from the personality, but the message was as needed and as powerful at that time as it ever was. And so that was really the focus, to take that powerful message and to repackage it in a way that could be communicated by other voices, by other people, and that's exactly what we did.
Well, I guess using the Peel Center as an example for other businesses who have a powerful leader who somehow don't share that message with everyone else who can also be that voice. I guess that's what I'm hearing is a lesson or to improve a particular corporation.
Well, that's true, and I think a recent example that I think a lot of people, whether you're a coffee drinker or not, or a Starbucks fan or not, Howard Schultz, who I had an opportunity to meet with quite a few years ago, when I met with him, I remember asking him what was his biggest concern, and his concern was, you know, what happens to these wonderful values that he espoused and was able to pass down to the organization when they were fairly small at that time. And of course, his greatest fear at the time became a reality a few years back. As you might recall, he had stepped away from the kind of the day-to-day running. He brought in somebody else, and they more or less lost their way. I think there's no better way to say that. And the remedy, well, he stepped back in, and of course, you saw an instant uptick with their stock, and they seemed to be, you know, back on track. Now, doesn't solve the longer-term question, which is what happens when Howard Schultz, for whatever reason, is no longer able to stay in that position. Steve Jobs is certainly another fantastic example from Apple.
Yes, I was going to mention that as well. But I also fear that the social morals today are not really, I don't know if they're not really taught, but ethics and integrity seem to be very low on the list in corporate America when you just see what's happened on Wall Street and such, and how the employee is not as valued as they once were.
And you know what's interesting about that is one would think, given, you know, especially when you think back 2 years ago with the whole everything kind of coming crashing down, one would think that there would be a heightened awareness and a demand for education and training and workshops in this area of ethics, when in fact, and I'm right in the middle of it all, in terms of my work with organizations, it's on the bottom of their list. The only time my phone rings for that kind of training is after the proverbial horse has been, you know, out of the barn. In other words, something happens, and like, for instance, UBS, several $1 billion now as a result of some wrongdoing, which is still being investigated, by the way. But my phone only rings after the accident, if you will. They are not taking a preventative position, and they're not focusing on really the key solution, which is to create a culture of integrity. And that, by the way, goes for whether it's a company, a public school, or even in your own home. Same principle.
So what are some steps that one can take to create this culture? How do we begin?
Well, first of all, by understanding and identifying the core values of an organization. Think of that, and I loved your, by the way, your opening statements, that whole idea of this requires attention and thoughtfulness. So when you talk about, you know, being present and being and going inward, there's actually a connection. In other words, what companies shouldn't do, or what they ought to avoid, is don't go outward. And what I mean by that is generally they look at what are other companies doing, and oh, these words sound great, and let's just, you know, use these, when in fact they really need to go inward. What is sacred to us? What are the values that we espouse? We don't care what anybody else thinks. We want to, you know, we're unique, we're different, and we need to really think about that. So number one is really to go through that soul searching. It really does start with the CEO or the top leader and the top leadership. So it starts there to begin to identify. This is not just a short fire drill. This is a process that could take months.
Well, I think it's intention, and I think Steve Jobs represents that beautifully, because he really has taken risks and has tried to be a leader and a visionary in the field of technology and what he has done with that technology to reach so many people. And why not? Why don't you want to carve your own path? You know, I think because we are so much about me, and that's why I so love the title of your book, Me, Inc., on so many levels.
And by the way, that was not meant to be selfish, if you will, because I think we have too much selfishness in the world.
Yes.
The whole idea behind Me, Inc., and I hopefully people will understand the spirit behind it, which is we cannot take care of others unless we take care of ourselves first. Like when we're on an airplane and they say, in the event of the loss of cabin pressure, please put the mask on yourself first if you're traveling with a young child, and then you're better able to serve the child or to help them with their mask. So that's the intention behind it. Not, in fact, anything but selfishness, but leading more to selflessness.
Exactly. Well, all these things that we're talking about starts with us, whether, you know, we're a CEO of a corporation, or how to blend your business principles to daily life, whether we're the head of our own family, how do we set the standard for our family, for our children, and to be successful, to support our spouses and their endeavors. It starts with us.
That's correct. And not only, and you know, it's for both not only in setting and achieving, you know, what we want in life, but also understanding that difficulties and challenges come up in life, disappointments, rejection, how to deal with that. Unfortunately, there's too many people that are not equipped. And sadly, when you said you don't even like to pick up a newspaper, as I was signing on to my browser, which happens to be AOL, I don't mean this to be an advertisement, but tragically, I'm just reading now, an 11-year-old boy in Canada committed suicide. He had muscular dystrophy, and he was assaulted and bullied. He couldn't take it any longer and ended up taking his life. This is an 11-year-old boy, and unfortunately was not equipped with the wherewithal on how to handle something like that. Tragic.
It's,
and we're hearing more and more about this.
I don't want to pass blame on anyone, but it comes down to also family values. And I mean, look, bullying has been going on for centuries. I mean, I was bullied. I'm sure maybe you were to some degree.
I went through the last kid being picked, you know, for the team, or not being picked at all. Or sure, yeah, we all do that. I mean, many of us have gone through those periods. And but to your point, I think that there was we had a stronger foundation that I think is no longer there, or it has been, let's say, compromised over the years, and that those things are there is a place for organized religion and faith in people's lives, and I know there's been a lot of unfortunate things that have happened that have turned people away from that, but there is a role for that. There is a role for, you know, think about again with the breakdown of the family, and I understand this is a new era, but the fact is, you no longer have, for instance, kids from a broken home that get conflicting messages on what the standard should be or what the values are, Lauren, right? So in other words, one weekend they're at one parent's house and it's okay to be out past a certain time or to have a sip of beer or something like that. The other weekend they're at the other parent's house and the rules are much stricter, and this creates a certain amount of conflict and tension. And a contradiction in the child's mind.
You're so right, and also there's so many different families today. It's not the basic mother father family dynamic. You know, there are gay and lesbian, which is great, but the principles are still the same, no matter
principles
what the dynamic
the
is.
And we know so also of a different. And look, I know we don't. This is not about, hey, we need to go back to, you know, back to the past and do things the way we did back then. That's done and over. But I think we need to learn what were those anchors and those moral foundations in life, and that includes grandparents, where you know, growing up, I think families geographically were probably a little bit closer. And again, when you had the family intact, you were more inclined to visit, let's say, the grandparents, where with the broken families, that's not happening as much. There's greater geographical, you know, more people move around. Sure, we have Skype, and we can, you know, kids can talk to their grandparents, but and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, but it doesn't take the place of that direct, like you said, you know, being present and that direct communication with people who we respect and who have a positive message to impart.
Well, I always think I grew up on the East Coast, and so a community was exactly that, your neighborhood, your neighbors, the ones that were right next door, and you engaged with them, you shared your life with them, and it was a community that pulled people together, and I think part of Obama's message is just that. And so I think, and I would like you to explain this, your book, Me, Inc., how can we, let's say, take up the metaphor of a broken business to a broken family, and how do we integrate tools to bring that together to make the family more positive?
Now, this is a three-hour show, right, Lauren?
Yeah. We're going to leave them hanging, Scott. You know, these are important questions, because we're affecting change.
But I would say, I'd go back to my comment about when you asked how do companies do this. I'm working with a client right now. Just today I was on the phone for about an hour. We're preparing to bring the heads together, let's say, to talk about. It starts with, I use a metaphor, the platinum standard. In other words, so now back to your question, you know, in a home environment, I think regardless of the nature of the family and how that has changed, the principles are the same, that the people, the parents, caregivers, need to be on the same page relative to the values that are important, the values that need to be reinforced within the family unit. They should not be, pushed down or shoved down the, down the kids' throats. The kids actually should be should participate in this. I teach a class of undergraduates in Connecticut at Fairfield University on business ethics, and we operate. We don't talk about rules or even code of conduct. We talk about the values that we will operate under during the course of the semester. And then, so I put that out to them. How would we like to treat each other? And Lauren, we hear things like respect and responsibility and care and kindness and things like that. And so we kind of collectively come up with that list and then talk about, now, what does that mean? Well, it means that you're not texting, when somebody's talking, or, you don't have your BlackBerry or iPhone or whatever on during the class, because that would be disrespectful, not only to the professor, but to each other.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit of a devil's advocate, if I may, and just say, sure, those principles are all fine and dandy, Scott, but, okay, I want to be a successful business person. And so what I'm experiencing in the business world is none of that. So now here's an ethical dilemma. How do I marry what I feel are important principles to myself, yet to get ahead, they don't exist?
So you're saying that okay, if I do these things and live by my platinum standard, the world really doesn't operate that way.
Correct. And I can't be the golden parachute is just arm's distance away. Yet I have principles, but I'm torn.
Yeah,
because I know the world works differently.
I think it comes down to really to being really honest with oneself and taking a hard look, because we do talk about that, whether it's in an academic environment or even with my kids. I've got teenagers, or in business. And again, the principle is the same, that you will be faced with these ethical dilemmas, these conundrums, and there's going to be that tension between what I know to be the right thing to do versus if I do the right thing, then I will not be rewarded, I will not get that promotion, I will be demoted, et cetera. Ultimately, that's valid. Ultimately, though, I think it's really coming in touch. It starts with being clear on what your platinum standard is. And I use platinum standard as a metaphor because platinum, of course, is a precious metal. It doesn't change. It doesn't expand, rust, corrode, et cetera. It remains pure. It's constant. And if there's ever a question, for instance, this metaphor comes from this 1 meter length of platinum in the Bureau of Labor and Bureau of Standards. If there's ever a question as to the exact length of a meter you compare against a platinum standard. So my point is, we need to develop a platinum standard for our own lives. We need to understand what that means and own it, and be prepared that when we are faced with one of those decisions, and especially the in-the-moment decisions, I think the more clear we are on what our platinum standard is, the more clear we are on this is not, it's sacred, it's not something that can be negotiated, then we'll be in a better position to make the right decision, regardless of the consequences.
Yeah, you're
finally,
right. I'm sorry.
No, I apologize. I believe, and I give many examples during, especially when I'm dealing with, again, the college students, these millennials. I share personal anecdotes where, I had to follow my own advice, and knowing that the outcome might be not good at all. It has always worked out. And I believe that at the end of the day, we've got to be able to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, I did the right thing. There might have been an unhappy consequence for me, but at least I can rest my head on the pillow and sleep well because I did the right thing.
That's right.
I know it sounds corny, but I do think that in the long run, in different ways, both professional success, but also that personal success, especially as we, so many people near the end, retired or let's say you know, later in life with these regrets that, oh, if I could have done this differently.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you were right at the top of the show when you said this should be a 3-hour show, because we are out of time. And I want to give people your website, which is positivedynamics.com, to learn more about Scott Ventrella and your two books. Me, and you have a third book that you'll have to come back and talk about and get more into this conversation about ethics, business ethics, and how we can use that as a platform to enrich our own lives. Scott, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you
for being a good sport.
No problem at all. It worked out.
And
you keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great work.
Oh, well, thank you. And please, you have an open invitation to come back on and talk some more about your message, which is very powerful, especially for the young people today. So thank you so much.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Again, you've been listening to Scott Ventrella, founder and president of Positive Dynamics, and you can reach Scott at positivedynamics.com. Please join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes, as my guest will be culinary genius and event planner to the stars, Randy Furman. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you so much for joining me and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. We'll see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes.